This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined in the studio by
Arvini Varanj.
And earlier we had a story about the aviation industry, but now we're moving on to a different story about the link between culture and competitive advantage. We do not have a social media post today, but if you guys want to get in touch with us, you can still WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And also you can tag Arvin at Arvin Yuvraj and me at Slither Chris, SlyTher. Chris. All right. Well, moving on to our second story. When the pandemic made it necessary for large groups of employees to work from home, it became clear that culture isn't tied to an office. Organizations found that culture not only kept a sense of community in the virtual workplace alive, but has also made a difference between companies surviving or thriving. And for the past 25 years, the Katzenbach Center, the Institute for Culture, Leadership and Teaming at Strategy and PwC's Strategy Consulting Group, has been studying the influence of culture on business success.
Yeah, so this year, they asked 3,200 survey participants to reflect on their experiences in the context of the COVID-19 crisis. The results show that for some, organizational culture has been the hero of their pandemic story. By reflecting on lessons learned during the pandemic, business leaders can glean insights that will carry them forward. The fact that many organizations believe their culture was a source of strength during the pandemic suggests that as leaders navigate a series of future challenges, amplifying the right part of their culture can provide them with a competitive advantage. But deficiencies within the organization's culture can also undermine its ability to meet its strategic objectives. So their survey shows that recruitment and retention of talent tops the list of future challenges that leaders are most worried about.
Yeah, and to clarify as well, this survey that we're referring to is PwC's Global Culture Study 2021. And now a lot of these results make sense given reports that many workers might have been sheltering in job, quote unquote, as economies began recovering from the pandemic. In fact, data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that in some places, people have already begun leaving their jobs. In the U.S., there are a record number of job openings, and the quits rate, which is the proportion of people who have quit their job, is sharply on the rise. People have many choices in the labor market today and are starting to act that way.
Yeah, so like the culture survey, PwC's 24th annual Global CEO survey reveals that leadership and talent development is a priority. It's among the top five areas executives plan to invest in over the next 3 years, which is interesting. But leaders are also grappling with the need to innovate more in more effective ways, transform digitally and address many other issues. So in the report, PwC lays out the evidence that amplifying their cultural traits can be a source of competitive advantage for companies. And they also identified that cultural challenges that the survey reveals, particularly the crisis of authenticity, a mismatch between what leaders say about culture, especially about things like diversity, equity and inclusion, and what their people actually experience on the ground.
Yes. And finally, they discuss ways in which leaders can activate their culture, managing cultural traits, specifically by using a variety of culture change enablers they've identified in order to support change and strategic objectives. Now, it is a really good, really in-depth report and well worth a read for anyone who's looking to up their game as a leader. I believe we will have a link to the report in our podcast description as well later on. Now, to get into the nitty-gritty of the report and to give it some local context, we managed to get a hold of Jasmine Peters, Director and Experience Consulting Lead at PwC Malaysia. So, Jasmine, thank you so much for staying on the line with us today. Now, is culture something that Malaysian companies prioritize, or has it only become important recently?
Malaysian companies have always said that culture is important, but it was not given much priority. And that's understandable, because business performance and objectives will always be the priority, or at least they always have been that priority. And once the business objectives for the year are actually announced, it's expected that culture will tag along and be able to align itself and perform accordingly so that the business outcomes are achieved. However, we recently polled the PwC Global Culture Survey 2021, and it's giving us some very interesting insights as to the different perceptions between management and employee in terms of where their organizational culture actually stands at. And these are some statistics that we feel need to be addressed. You need to understand why there is such a huge gap and then address it accordingly, because this can then derail business objectives if we don't actually address the issues that are creating this misalignment within an organization. And the reason I'm saying that is also because employees have said that their culture is a source of competitive advantage, and that organizations will need to evolve their cultures to be able to be relevant and sustainable, especially over the next 3 to 5 years. So these are some of the key indicators that we've got from the survey. So will this become more important? Definitely. We are seeing trends where organizations are starting to assess and appreciate their culture at a more granular level. And this has all been also because of the pandemic, which has necessitated the changes in the way we work. Technology, of course, has been very instrumental in supporting this shift. But there are other elements that play a foundational role in enabling an organization to adapt fast and with greater success. And that is the culture.
Mm-hmm. So many organizations continue to enforce a work-from-home policy or operate at a lower capacity at the workplace. How has this had an impact on culture?
As we continue to work from home, there will be impact on culture, primarily because we've always been used to working at a physical space in the office. And people go to work not just to earn an income, but also to have a social environment in which they can build camaraderie, collaborate, grow, contribute, and innovate. Now, while we can still do quite a bit of that online, we are human beings and we enjoy the face-to-face interactions that we have. And I think that's something that many organizations, we hear people telling us that they really miss that kind of connectivity. A lot of them say that hybrid is something they do like because it gives you that kind of flexibility to work from home or to work from wherever else besides the office. But totally not being able to connect in a physical space together is something that people say they do long for and they actually are looking forward to, and hopefully sometime in the near future. So what we saw from our global culture survey this year and from the Malaysian respondents, 75% have told us that they were able to adapt and respond quickly. So that's encouraging. 39%, however, told us that employee satisfaction has decreased as a result of the pandemic. So what we do understand from what they're telling us is that flexibility is in demand, right? And an organization's decision on whether employees will work in the office or home or both will be a differentiating factor in terms of workplace attractiveness. The other thing is feasibility of where people can work may also depend on the kind of industry that you come from, right? But should we want people to go back to work, then the hygiene factors and the SOPs will be top of mind and a priority that employees will want to see put in place. And if we should continue to look at remote work as the mode, then the right tools and training, and employees will need to be empowered a lot more to be able to perform at their best, especially when there's total remote work. Right? And some organizations have been very comfortable and only familiar with full work from office will really need to reassess what its operating model is going forward and how they want to manage the workforce. And that will also look at possibly some level of investments in technology, a lot of training. But I believe at the end of the day, it's a lot of trust and empowerment that will lead the charge in how that policy and procedure will then be shaped for that organization.
All right. Jasmine, stay on the line with us for a second. We are going to take a short break. This is Here I Go Again with Whitesnake. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes. If you want to get in touch with us, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp and at BFM Radio. This is BFM 89.9.
Broking financial mergers. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes featuring One Banana from Malaysia, Christine Wong, and also in the studio is
Arvind Vraj.
Right. Today we are talking about the link between culture and competitive advantage. And of course, we have a guest on the line right now.
Yeah. So waiting on the line with us is Jasmine Peters. We were talking to her before the break. She is Director and Experience Consulting Lead at PwC Malaysia. Jasmine, thanks for holding on the line. We want to continue by asking you, you know, the survey highlights a number of gaps between leaders and employees' views on culture. So why do you think this happens?
We are indeed seeing big gaps between how leaders and employees view their culture. Let's see why this also happens. Our recent survey did tell us that we have 75% of leaders believing that they actually role model purpose, values and cultures of the organization. But sadly, only 52% of the employees agree. We also see about 80% of leaders saying they feel connected to an organization's purpose. However, we see only 57% of employees feeling the same way. We also see 75% of leaders believing that their organizations actively listen to differing voices and perspectives when making major decisions, even if that adds more time and complexity. But not very encouraging from the employee side and their perspective, because that only comes in at 48%. 76% of leaders agree that their organizations embrace flexibility and make adjustments to help people with differing needs to excel at work. 63% only from the employee group feel the same. So that's where the challenges are, right? Perception and our lenses. So a lot of times we are limited by what we know, and that's how the surveys help us actually look at the reality of the situation so that we can actually put the right interventions and address the issue, right? So purpose for employees is very, very important. And all organizations, of course, very clearly define their purpose. But are we actually exhibiting that purpose, right? From the way we walk the talk in terms of the values and the behaviors that we portray, does that resonate back to this purpose? And employees look at things like this, right? Subconsciously and consciously. So there are a lot of indicators that give up the right vibes, or sadly, may not be giving out the vibes as needed, right? And the reason is because oftentimes information is cascaded downwards, and a lot of it gets lost in translation. It gets either miscommunicated or its whole essence and spirit is diluted as it moves downwards. Right? More hierarchical-based organizations may face this issue stronger. Nonetheless, the disparity in the perception is clear between management and employees. So what do organizations do? What can they do? One is to ensure that communication is consistent and that there is constant and frequent communication. That's important. We don't want to over-communicate. We don't want to overstate things. But we need to be very clear what we want to communicate and how we communicate that one. One is, of course, through the verbal means of communication, be it at town halls, be it at meetings, be it at events that we have, right? You know, even virtually, we do have events. So what is the messaging? The messaging has to come out to be very clear. It needs to be very succinct, and it needs to be precise. And I always say, less is always more. Stick to 2 to 3 points, right? Or 5 at the most, especially when you're addressing a big crowd. And make sure it's very clear as to what that purpose is, what the value within that communication piece is, and what is the outcome you expect after communicating those couple of points that you want to actually put forward to the employee population. That's one. The other thing is feedback. We oftentimes get feedback through our engagement surveys or any form of platforms that an organization may have. But oftentimes we do not action on the feedback. Then there's trust that is lost. Or we say, if you solicit feedback, you must action. Even if the action is to say that these are things you cannot address now, or you cannot do now, or you cannot deliver on, then that also needs to be communicated back to the employees, that this cannot be done, and give the reasons. But of course, always try and also look for some quick wins that you can get.
Absolutely. Now, various studies have shown that culture drives organizational performance. How should companies use culture to carve out a competitive advantage?
We've often heard the statement that culture eats strategy for breakfast. I don't think one is superior to the other. We need both a good strategy, a very clearly thought out and defined strategy, so the organization is very aware of its direction and what it needs to do to get to that strategy into a reality. But what you then need is a strong culture that's aligned, right? Believing in what that strategy is able to achieve, to work towards making that a reality. So how then can an organization take advantage of its culture? One, every organization has its own DNA, right? The DNA is what made you and built you to where you are today. And there's a lot of good in that. But you may also find a lot of areas where you feel you could have been better in, or could for now improve as well. So I think it's, the first step is to say, let's have a good, honest view of where we are. What's good and why that's good, and some of the things which are not so good. And then the next step would be to focus on the critical few to see how then you can actually evolve your culture to move with the times, okay, to be a lot more adaptive, to be a lot more agile, so that you are able to then be relevant and continue to survive and thrive. Right? So survival is not just to be able to sustain and just be there, but also to thrive, right? And who knows what that evolution would be. Now, the thing is, when we talk about an organization culture as a competitive advantage, we also need to understand the strength of our people. So people have within their job scopes and roles that they play in the organization, they have some roles, and they are usually measured against their performance within that kind of role, correct? Now, what's also necessary is that as we evolve, given this pandemic has taught us many things of how we need to be agile and how a lot of things that we may have put at the back burner has today come to the forefront in terms of digital agenda and so on. So what then do we do is to also appreciate the greater ability of our people, the workforce that we manage. And that's really where your competitive advantage is in. A lot of times we find that when we put people into projects or groups and we take them out of their day jobs, right, or we take them out partly from their day jobs, they are a lot more able to be innovative. And when they're given that kind of a platform where they can show their creativity and innovative abilities, they actually do bring forward a lot of good value, right? And a lot of times management feels it needs to make all these decisions by itself. What management should do is to actually include, right, to be very inclusive of the working level teams to come in to actually help shape your organization strategy, shape or relook at the operating model, or even relook at your processes and your policies and your governance structures. Get the people involved, right? And get them involved at the same level where they're able to contribute, where they are able to actually bring forward new ideas or ideas that are actually going to save the organization a lot of time, cost, and money, right? So this is where I feel an organization can take advantage of its culture as its competitive advantage is by being very inclusive of the whole organization, especially as you carve out new strategies and especially as you carve out new operating models. Get your people involved, and that will be a really good start. And then make sure from that kind of decision, you then align what is going to be the priorities. Be very clear as to the priorities.
All right. Well, Jasmine, just hold on for another couple of minutes here. We do have to take another break. We're, of course, speaking to Jasmine Peters, Director and Experience Consulting Lead of PwC Malaysia, all about the link between culture and competitive advantage. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so, although we do not have a social media post. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. For now, here is New Generation by Suede on BFM 89.9.
Benchmark for Managers, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites here on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined by
Arvind Yuvraj.
And also on the line is
Jasmine Peters, Director and Experience Consulting Lead from PwC Malaysia. We've been talking to her from before the break. Jasmine, thanks for staying on the line. We want to ask you, like, how does upskilling play a role in developing strong company culture?
We hear a lot about upskilling today. So many organizations are talking about how they should upskill their workforce. And a lot of that, of course, is along the digital upskilling requirements. And many times in conversation with our clients too, we hear, should we upskill and reskill? You know, is it one and the same thing? Right. So I guess there's a lot of conversation and concern around where do we start this upskilling journey? What do we focus on in terms of what kind of content, what kind of modules? The next thing that they are concerned is how will this delivery be done, right? In terms of do we take people off work and allow them to learn, give them time to actually learn this new skill or get upskilled? Do we make them do this as they work? Do we do this via projects? And then the next question is, of course, how then do we actually ensure that there's a career progression aligned with the kind of upskill, and also then how do we make sure we put this into a performance review system whereby they are actually given the right kind of recognition that this upskill has actually taken place. So will it actually then enhance an organization's culture, of course, given that this is a strong requirement, right, and strong request, both from an organization perspective and the employees, and upskill will actually equip people better. But the challenge, of course, now is to decide what kind of upskilling do you actually need within your kind of industry, and which one are you going to focus on first? I think that is important as a start. The next thing is to then say, if so, are we going to focus on this as a basic requirement that we need as we move into the new ways of working, or is this something that we need to ensure that we are accelerating our business operating model and our business imperatives? And then how then will we also, as we have this kind of skill set, it probably be new ways of managing the employee. So that's the other challenge as well. As we put in upskill, it's definitely a competitive advantage. But what are the building blocks that will be needed to ensure you are able to support this upskill and take it from strength to strength?
Right. And final question for you, Jasmine. Thank you so much for your patience on the line with us today. Culture is often seen as something that's embedded and unchanging. What are your views? When does culture need to evolve and how should companies approach this change?
Culture has very strong roots in an organization. From the time of inception of an organization, the culture starts growing. And it will grow in strength as it gets bigger, as it gets more entrenched, right? And that will form the basis of that organization's strength and value. So does it change? It will evolve. Right? It will evolve. It will continue to grow. Leaders who see the opportunity as looking at culture as a competitive advantage will always leverage what's good about the culture and keep taking it to the next level and to the next. And that's not without its challenges, of course. But take strong views and have a strong appreciation of what's really happening within your own environment, right? As you see challenges or opportunities in the external environment that you work with, what is happening within and outside, and you try to ensure that you strengthen the culture and you evolve it. So how should organizations go about this? When is the right time to evolve? I think you should always be prepared for evolution. This pandemic has taught us that. Instantly, practically overnight, things shifted for us. I never did believe in a time where we will see that we will need to work from home for this number of months, right? Over a year. So you will need to evolve when you need to evolve. Right. Sometimes you need to be a bit more predictive about it. So for a lot of organizations now, the understanding of whether you need to evolve now or later, it's now. Right. Because this kind of work environment will continue. Even after we are allowed to go back to being in physical spaces every day, this hybrid work model will always be present. It will be something that's a norm because it will make sure we are a lot more attractive in the employment world. So you need to evolve when you see the opportunities for you to actually advance the way you work and the way you think. And then you make sure you're a lot more attractive to the people that you do business with and also to the kind of people that you want to attract into the organization, and to be prepared. But in the evolution of growing your culture, you must always also stay true to what actually made you the culture you are today. Because then there's strong purpose, right? So I always say go back to the purpose and stay true to the purpose of what set you up. How can you approach this is to always ask yourself, what are our people ready to do? Right? What we need to do as a business against, are our people ready? Right? And to understand where the challenges are. So not to put the cart before the horse and have very high ambitions, but the workforce is not ready. So to ensure then that those ambitions are matched with what capability we have, but then the delta of that is to see how we can accelerate that kind of growth for our employees so that they are able to also meet the aspirations. And so also keep the aspirations more realistic so that they are wins.
All right, fantastic. That was Jasmine Peters, Director and Experience Consulting Lead at PwC Malaysia, speaking to us all about the link between culture and competitive advantage. This is all, of course, based on PwC's surveys. So it is based on their Global Culture Study 2021, as well as their 24th Annual Global CEO Survey as well.
So I wanted to ask you, like, do you think that once the pandemic is over, it's weird to even say something like that, since now we're talking about like endemic and we have to wait.
Well, let's say not over, but once we've achieved a semblance of normalcy
and safety and comfort,
something
I guess.
Something like that. Yeah, okay. Once we're back in the groove of things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think companies will be able to go back to their previous culture?
I think personally, I think that it would be it would be foolish for any company to think that they can go back. Mm-hmm. I think we've heard that from a lot of experts where there's no going back to what we previously had in a sense. Yeah. You know, you can sort of get something similar or something along the same lines, but the pandemic has completely obliterated whatever the standard for work is, essentially, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that much like what was said by Jasmine throughout, you know, today's show, a lot of it is about adapting and being realistic about what your future is going to be like. And I think establishing, you know, a very strong culture from the ground up is really important right now.
And also, like, sometimes completely disregarding the pandemic altogether. Like, we've heard about how some companies, I think Twitter is one of it, Spotify is definitely one of it, where mm-hmm. they've opened up permanent work-from-home positions.
Yeah.
So those companies are sort of going like, oh, we don't even care when this ends or when this slows down or whatever. We're just going to move forward and then do what feels right for us now, which is somewhat linked to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, you just really have to sort of start from scratch in many ways. And I think that's something that, in a strange kind of way, it's almost a silver lining because you get the opportunity to sort of start all over again and really ensure that, you know, whatever culture that you are trying to implement throughout your organization, that it is very strongly felt by all employees as well. Mm-hmm. And that you have the consistency and the communication available to you as well for that.
Also, there's that huge silver lining, the fact that I think a lot of employers and even employees suddenly, like literally overnight, found out that there's more than one way to do something.
Yeah.
There's more than one way that a company functions. And sometimes a company functions even when no one's in the company physically. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, crisis is the mother of innovation, right? So.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that is about it for Enterprise Biz Bytes today. Of course, we had that story about...
We spoke about the aviation industry and how it's confident in the sector's sustainability.
And we were just talking about the link between culture and competitive advantage. And we were speaking, of course, to Jasmine Peters, Director and Experience Consulting Lead at PwC Malaysia. But that is about it for today's Enterprise Biz Bytes. Coming up next, though, after 1 p.m. News Bulletin, where we will hear, of course, more about the cabinet lineup that Dato Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob announced earlier today, we will hear the Breakfast Grill replay. With a change in leadership following alleged unethical and integrity issues at a 60% owned unit, the Breakfast Grill spoke to Rahman Ra Abdullah, Delium's new group CEO, about steps to address integrity concerns. They'll also look at the business prospects and strategy ahead, including shifting away from Malaysia, its order book and pipeline, plans to tap into other sectors like renewables and more. On behalf of myself, Christine Wong, and of course, Arvind Yuvaraj, we will be back. Well, we won't be back.
Yeah.
But you will be back, I think, next week
on
Enterprise Biz Bytes on Monday.
Virtually.
Virtually, yes. Mm-hmm. Joined, of course, by our other colleagues, Audrey and Frida, next week. And also, do make sure to tune in to Open for Business at 10 a.m. Throughout next week as well, as we are celebrating Merdeka with a theme about Malaysia, the next chapter, looking at, you know, companies and people who exemplify what the future may hold for the country as well. I'm Christine Wong, and this is Arvind Yuvaraj, and have a great weekend, you guys. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.